Dr. Yvette Senator Norman Richmond. Joining us on the line is Dr. Gerald Horn. Dr. Gerald Horn is the holds the John Jay and Rebecca Morris Chair of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston, and he is the author of about 40 books, and he's got a book. He's working on a book right now on boxing. Of course, he'll be talking about the money, who makes the money in boxing, and just like he did on his jazz book. But first of all, Dr. Horn, how are you doing today?
Well, it could be worse. As far as I know, I'm still alive.
It sounds like you're alive. Your voice is very strong.
Oh, glad to hear it.
Melinda, do you want to kick everything off?
Well, I just wanted to start with, since you're in Texas, we've seen in the headlines that, you know, this whole question of opening up, different states opening up. Yeah, and since you're in Texas, maybe comment on that.
Well, it's rather ironic. Texas, as you know, is one of the most reactionary and conservative places on planet Earth. It's the second most populous state in the United States of America. You may recall that slave owners seceded from Mexico in the 1830s and tried to establish an independent state based on slave trading. In fact, as I point out in my Cuba book, a lot of the Africans in Cuba were basically brought there by Texas slave owners, and their ships, slave ships, could be found off the coast of Angola, off the coast of Brazil, between 1836 and 1845. And I say all that to say that Texas's pedigree in terms of being reactionary is perhaps second to none. In any case, what's happened is that the governor, under pressure from the right wing, or perhaps even because of his own instincts, is opening up. That is to say, in the midst of a pandemic, there is going to be the opening of certain enterprises in Texas. And I'm sure what will happen is that the hospitals will be overrun sooner rather than later. And there's a very dangerous turn of events, not only in Texas, but I would say throughout the United States of America, because in the last 48 hours, there have been these demonstrations by Trump supporters in Lansing, Michigan, in Austin, Texas, and other state capitals, demanding that the lockdown be ended. And of course, they were not observing social distance at these demonstrations. They were shoulder to shoulder, sometimes cheek by jowl. And that will, of course, also lead to an overrunning of the hospitals. And some, perhaps not cynics, or perhaps cynics might say that it also would lead to a high mortality rate for these demonstrators. They were funded in some cases by the family of Betsy DeVos, who is the Secretary of Education under Trump, but is from one of the richest families in the United States. These are basically neo-fascist demonstrations egged on by Mr. Trump. And I'm afraid to say that there's been more muttering by the left and the right about martial law being imposed in the United States. Martial law basically means no law. That basically means a suspension of civil liberties. You can be detained indefinitely. And it's a very dangerous turn of events. And I'm afraid to say that the folks, particularly our left-wing friends, are not ready for this. As I've been arguing repeatedly, some might say incessantly, on this program and elsewhere, I think they've misjudged the democratic potential of the United States. To put it more pointedly, because certain Irish Catholics and because certain Central and Eastern European Jewish communities could receive rights and liberties in North America that they did not receive in Europe, these leftists leaped to the conclusion that the United States was more democratic, say, than Europe, for example. When actually, those who were involved in settler colonialism in the United States were not that choosy about those they defined as, quote, white, unquote, who they would choose to help to fight the Native Americans and enslave on a mass basis the Africans. And so I'm afraid to say we might be on the verge of paying a very stiff and heavy price for a fundamental political miscalculation, which involves misjudging the democratic potential of U.S. imperialism, which even saying that sounds like it's an oxymoron. And speaking of which, I've heard more inquiries of late of people thinking about moving to British Columbia, moving to Victoria and Vancouver. So perhaps on a mass basis, Norman and Molly, you can provide some pointers in that regard.
Well, there's a young man who I grew up with, used to be my roommate, James Johnson. He changed his name to Rashidi. He's living in British Columbia. I haven't seen or heard from him in a... Someone is in contact with him. I know that it's in Los Angeles. And I better get his contact real quick and see if he can help some folks, because I've heard a lot of people talk about coming here. And but I have a list of people. I think the first person that asked me that was a couple of years ago was my old schoolmate Charles Burnett. So he might be making films up here pretty soon.
Well, I mean, the United States, I mean, it doesn't have the healthcare infrastructure. As I said, the hospitals are on the verge of being overrun in the midst of a pandemic. Mr. Trump is talking about withdrawing the United States from the World Health Organization, which is like throwing the pilot out of the airplane in the middle of a flight. And, you know, I watch Mr. Trump's briefings on a regular basis. Don't ask me why. Perhaps I'm a masochist. But sometimes, like yesterday, Saturday, this guy was, he would seem half crazed. I'm not sure, he may be cracking under the pressure, which obviously is not reassuring when the man at the wheel is cracking under the pressure in the midst of a global pandemic. I mean, he's going off on tirades against reporters and denouncing their questions, and it's insane down here now.
Well, I just wanted, before Molly jumps in, I have a thing. You mentioned, well, Chairman Mao used to say, know the enemy, know yourself, 100 battles, 100 victories. I think that's why you pay attention to Donald Trump.
Well, maybe so. But it's very unnerving what's going on right now south of the border. And if we look to history as a guide, we recall that oftentimes when a beast is cornered, the beast acts not only with fury, but irrationally. That's what happened in the 1930s when Italy attacked Ethiopia, for example, and all of those were steps to World War II, a massive bloodletting. And we see this U.S. flotilla off the coast of Venezuela as we speak. So this is a very unnerving time. And it also, speaking of leaders, reminds me of what Fidel Castro used to always say. One of his favorite phrases, if you go do a search, is having nerves of steel. You needed nerves of steel in October 1962 when the world was on the verge of a nuclear holocaust and the United States was about to attack Cuba with nuclear missiles. And Cuba was saying, this is the time to settle things once and for all with the Yankee imperialists and attack them in turn. And when Cuba was dispatching troops to Angola to fight the South Africans in 1975, and Washington was threatening to invade Cuba in turn, he said, you needed nerves of steel. And I think that's what we all need right now, nerves of steel.
I agree. Melinda, you want to continue?
Well, I was, before we kind of move to, you know, Venezuela, but maybe talk about a little bit about the DNC and the nomination. Bernie endorsed, basically conceded, but yeah, maybe talk about a little bit about the Democratic Party right now.
Well, what happened is that Senator Sanders, who is the Democratic Socialist senator from Vermont, basically withdrew from the race, threw his support to the presumptive nominee, the man who Mr. Trump calls Sleepy Joe Biden. His son calls him Beijing Biden. And by the way, that latter nickname suggests that China is going to be a big issue over the next 6 months before this election. Although it's going to be very difficult because if you look at the testing regime that's in place in the United States right now to try to test millions of people for the virus, it's all dependent on the supply chain stretching back to China in order to be successful. And
all of North America, really.
Well, yes, and it's quite extraordinary that you're going to be attacking the country that's helping to keep you alive. But, you know, as I said, sometimes in the beast's corner, the beast acts irrationally. But in any case, now the question is whether or not Mr. Sanders supporters will support the Biden ticket. It's a big article in the New York Times today asking Sanders supporters if they will. Many of them say no. But what's interesting is that there will be this massive attempt over the next few months to hammer Sanders supporters in line to support Biden. But there will be less effort to convince the Euro-American working class and middle class supporters of Trump to break ranks. I don't know, and support Biden. I mean, why is it that only the left gets pressure? Do people assume that they cannot change the minds of the Trump supporters? That's a lost cause. And if so, they should say it's a lost cause, and then they should explain why it's a lost cause. But that never happens in this country as this ship of state heads to an iceberg.
And you are listening to Diasporic Music on Black Power 96. Had you exhausted that, and can we move to China and Africa?
Oh, sure.
Let me say a couple of things. China is, I guess, in the crosshairs of a lot of African people worldwide, and the Malik Zulu Shabazz has called for stern measures against the Chinese community. And how do you see the situation with the Chinese?
Well, point number one, I just got an urgent text which says, quote, Uhuru radio server blocked for listen live. Try three devices on Wi-Fi, one on LTE. So I don't know if anybody can look into that. People are trying to listen in and apparently are being blocked. In any case, with regard to China, what happened is that there were these very disturbing news reports about Guangzhou, China, where it was said that Africans who were residing there were being persecuted, being forced to leave their homes, being taunted because supposedly they're the carrier of the virus. This was taking place at the same time that there was persecution, if not bigotry, directed against Chinese Americans on these shores for similar reasons. And so what happened is that the African Union called in the Chinese representative in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where the African Union is located, for urgent consultations. Bobby Wine, the Ugandan opposition leader, who is also a singer, by the way, has a very useful cut right now on the virus that you can probably find on some service.
We played it already. We played it a couple of times. Yes, sir.
Oh, good. And so Bobby Wines has sought to organize an airlift from southern China back to the continent. It's a very disturbing turn of events. I've suggested that our friends in Los Angeles have urgent consultations with the Chinese legation there. I would say the same to our friends in Toronto and Ottawa in particular. And I'm sure that China will retreat because they got enough problems, dealing with this irrational beast in Washington. The fact that for the first time in 40 years, there was an economic decline in the recent quarter, not only because of a good deal of the country is under lockdown, but even as China leaves lockdown, where are they going to export all these goods to? Not to the United States, which is their major customer. So I think China will be willing to listen to reason. And certainly, I'm not in favor of any sort of tit for tat. I mean, many Chinese Americans, many of these people are anti-communist. They don't even support the People's Republic of China. So why are you going to start to harass them when, I read the Epoch Times all the time, which is this anti-communist
China newspaper, published here in the United States. I mean, they're hysterical in their opposition to the People's Republic of China. And so, I don't know. I'm not sure if the comrade thought that situation through.
Well, I remember the last time I was in Los Angeles, when you go into the Los Angeles Public Library, which is a wonderful institution, before you walk in, well, just across the street, there was a big box full of these Epic Times, these free papers, and oh my God, it was it's the most anti-communist publication, one of the most anti, well, it read like some of the John Birch Society material.
Hey, they're off the chain, off the hook. I mean, plus they're hysterically pro-Trump too, for that matter. So as I said, people really need to, I know people are frightened right now. People are anxious. As Governor Cuomo of New York might say, because I watch his briefings quite a bit as well. I get it. but that's no excuse, it seems to me, for going off half-cocked and into various sorts of attacks.
Well, we just had a Ricky Atkinson, a young man who is born here, is African Canadian, and he also has Métis. Well, he's a United Nations, but he is a boxer. You're doing the book on boxing. I wanted to ask you that. And then I wanted to segue in on the passing of Henry Grimes, the bass player who died at 84 of the virus.
Yeah, including Lee Konitz, apparently Ellis Marsalis, Wallace Roney, the trumpeter, of course, Ellis Marsalis, the patriarch of the Marsalis clan of New Orleans, including Winford and Branford, among others. Yeah, the virus is really devastating the Black community, which is something we've talked about more than once. In fact, at the end of the day, this virus is going to, and the what comes attendant to it, which needs to be underlined, because it's not just the virus, it's what comes attendant to it, is going to be killing Black people and wiping out Black wealth. Because what's happening as well is that you're going to have a tremendous unemployment right now in this country. I mean, there are long lines to get free food. The homeless population is increasing, which already was disproportionately Black. So it's a major crisis at the same time, as I said, where the left, I think, is sort of ideologically disarmed and weak. And the right wing is organizing demonstrations funded by billionaires like the DeVos clan. By the way, Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education, her brother is Eric Prince, who, as you know, has this mercenary firm. They keep changing their names. They were once known as Blackwater.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what their name is now because they're one step ahead of the posse. So,
pardon me, Gerald, but they're just as bad as the French Foreign Legion, aren't they?
Oh, even worse, because this is a private corporation. It's not, it's a de facto arm of the state, but it's basically a profit-making enterprise. They're mercenaries, basically. And as you know, I wrote about mercenaries in Southern Africa and all the havoc they wreaked beginning, particularly in the 1970s, fighting against the Zimbabweans, who, of course, just marked their 40th anniversary. Actually, I think it's today or yesterday, the 40th anniversary of Zimbabwean independence.
Right.
And since you're the music maven, you might want to play Bob Marley's song on Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe, yes, right.
Or even sing it, even better. So
I think I want to let everybody know that you are a better singer than me. You're the blues man. I wanted you to sing "Big Boss Man Can't See Your Name When I Call." But anyway.
Well, actually, you know, Norman is, well, he's slightly exaggerating. I actually, some years ago, I was a singer in the former Soviet Union. I organized a blues band. In fact, where I performed in
the city then known as Leningrad, now St. Petersburg. The U.S. performer who performed right before me was Duke Ellington, believe it or not. So, that's probably the first time my name and Duke Ellington's name has been used in a sentence.
So you open up for Sir Duke Ellington. Oh, so I can't even talk to you anymore.
No, I didn't say I opened up for him. I just said he was there and then I came. It wasn't like I opened up for him. I'm not going to tell that lie. But in any case, yeah, the virus is wiping out our musicians. Many of them don't have health care, like many Black Americans don't have health care. In this country, as you know, health care is tied to your job. So you lose your job, you lose your health care. I mean, they set it up so there will be a cascading effect of misery. And, that's why more people are inquiring about moving to British Columbia.
Yeah, I know my family work for the county, so they are, I guess, working for the county or the post office. I guess those were premier jobs, wouldn't you say, at one time?
And still are. The problem now is, of course, is with tax revenues falling, there are going to be layoffs in the government positions. As a matter of fact, there's scuttlebutt, which is probably true, that Trump may want to destroy or somehow remake the U.S. Postal Service, the post office, before the election, because there's all this talk that because of the virus, it's dangerous to send people to the polls all at once. And so he wants to limit turnout and doesn't want mail ballots by voting by mail. So if there's no post office, you can't vote by mail. And so there you have it.
Oh, before we get off of this, I wanted to ask you, Kali Okuno, the Jackson Corporation, Jackson, and other people are calling for a general strike on May 1st. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I wish them luck. I mean, a general strike is more than a notion. I mean, it takes massive organization. And plus, how's that going to work? I mean, I've been getting these emails from my friends in the December 12th movement in New York. They're calling for Black Solidarity Day in November for people to stay home. But people are staying home anyway. And so it may be still staying home in November. So when you call for a general strike, does that mean that people stay home? Well, people are staying home anyway. So I guess the beauty of that is you can say, hey, we had a successful general strike. Nobody went to work. But hey, nobody went to work anyway. People are staying at home anyway. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. Do they want people to
amass? Kali Okuno has a thing he's put out. And I think there's an interview with him on YouTube right now. So he explains it. I haven't really seen it because I just haven't had time, but it's there.
I just got
maybe
another text.
Maybe it's a preparation towards November when people do have to stay home.
Oh, I see. I just got another text
when they're ordered back to work or something.
Oh, I see. I just got another text saying.
I don't know. That's my thing. I haven't read it. I haven't read Callie's run on it, so I shouldn't talk without hearing it. But yeah.
Well, I just got another text saying the Uhuru radio server blocked for Listen Live. So I don't know if Uhuru radio is being sabotaged or what, but your tech might want to look into that.
So Lisa actually checked this, and it says, she said that basically that it was working on the app. And maybe a good thing is if people can contact the show, we're on Facebook, it's Diasporic Music. And then maybe we could get their contact and we could figure out where the miss is coming from and maybe direct them where they can listen to the show.
Also, do you all do Facebook Live?
Pardon me, do you do
Facebook Live?
Yeah, that's like we're trying to podcast the show. So if we get people's contact, maybe we could direct them more to something that works. That's what I'm hoping, because there's an app. If people are on phones, they could download the app and they could get it easier. But if people could contact the Facebook page for Diasporic Music on Facebook, just Google us, or you can contact us diasporicmusic@gmail.com.
Fair enough.
I'm glad you informed us about that, because it's yeah, I guess we have this is going to be happening more. It's going to be happening more and more, I guess, as time passes.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say that?
Well, I think the state is going to come down on progressive radio, Uhuru Radio, and anybody else that's taking a I don't want to mention any names, but there are certain loyal oppositionists who have daily shows. The loyal opposition, I think the state is even going to silence them as well, although they try to be balanced and, you know, have someone come on from this side and the other side. Whereas Uhuru Radio, we don't, you know, basically we present our side, and I don't think we try to be objective in terms of because African and all oppressed people have are being thwarted if you have a message that's counter to the status quo. If I'm sure you agree with that.
I hear you. Well, you know, I'm sorry to hear that right now you're being blocked, but, you know, hopefully your more than capable techs can look into that and resolve it by next week.
Is there, Melinda, is there any another question you wanted?
Well, I don't know if you have time. We didn't really talk about Venezuela, what's going on.
Well, the crisis continues, and so does Maduro, as the saying goes. And he's proven himself to be a wily operator, still in power, although if you looked at the press in January, February 2019, you would have thought that he was on his way out. And instead, the opposition, Juan Guaido, has been continuously marginalized since then. So that's the good news. But perhaps... When we talk again, you can, and I'm serious about this British Columbia thing, you can provide more detail about, I don't know, the weather, you know, what are the other assets, the nature of the African community in British Columbia, the nature of the politics in British Columbia, because I'm serious. I mean, there's real discussion about a mass exodus from this sinking ship.
Well, you know, Jimi Hendrix is a, grandmother lived there, and Jimi Hendrix spent some time in British Columbia, and I think they came out of the AME Church, African Methodist Episcopal Church. But I'm gonna do some research on BC, and like I say, James Johnson Rashidi is there. I'll try to make contact with him.
Yeah, the only discordant note I would have about British Columbia, I was in Victoria doing research a few years ago, and I went into a barbershop to get a haircut. The guy wouldn't cut my hair. I didn't believe it.
I said, white dude?
Yeah, I thought I was in Dixie. You know, said,
yeah.
Damn. And I said, I was thinking, I hope this is not typical, but that's my only negative experience I had when I was in Victoria some years ago.
Well, the barbershops in Toronto, especially this new generation, they are very, very, very different because, you know, where we come from, the barbershop is it's all African affairs. But I go to a barbershop, is a Trinidadian brother has a barbershop, and you would think it was the United Nations in there, you know. He's a good PR man, but I guess that's like if you look at a lot of these gospel choirs now. At one time they were all black, but now you go a lot of these choirs. You look at they're still predominantly black, but you see, you know, Euro Americans and Asians and everybody singing the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see that when we were growing up, did you?
No, not at all. But as I said, I mean, you know, maybe that was just a weird barber in Victoria. And I didn't hold it against the entire province.
I mean, I mean, Victoria is a very colonial city. So when I first went there, I went out west. The whole thing was like there was no black people there. In my head, I didn't think that was possible. So I was like, no, I'm sure there's some people. And I went there and I spent a summer in Vancouver. And that was real. Like, that was real. And then I went to Victoria. And I was just going to Vancouver Island, like going across the island and stuff. So I was in Victoria and I was like, there's so much, Union Jack out here. And that's when it clicked in. Oh, British Columbia, of course.
Hey, where can you download the app? I just got another text about that.
Lisa will know that answer. Google Play, I would say iTunes. I don't know wherever you get your app from your phone, depending on if you're on an iPhone or Android.
Yeah, I can't. I we'll put that up on Facebook, and I will send out an email to people as well. Whatever social media we have, we'll use it to send that information out.
diasporicmusic@gmail.com. Send us an email and we'll get you on the list.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so I think we've run out of time, and until next time, we will see you in the whirlwind. I would like to thank Lisa Watson for teching Molly Docuvexin. And I guess as Marcus Garvey would say, we will see you in the whirlwind.
Good luck.
Take care.